Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Welcome to our show, and this is going to be episode number 501 as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, what? Her alcohol. Yeah, you've been reading about this, so we're going to be talking about it too, ladies. All right, this is such a special show, and I know it's really going to resonate with so many of you. Before we begin, please know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature. That's Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. You know, they've got a special gift for women, the award-winning Her Life Stages products that provide support for women all the way from the menstrual years, including PMS, through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. It's an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, run on over to your local health food store, to Whole Foods, to Sprouts, to Amazon, and even the website, solaray.com. You'll be glad you did. If you go to the website, use HER20 for 20% off. That's your promo code, HER20. All right, now here's your first reminder to click on iTunes after the episode to rate and review today's show, because we love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Now, you're all sitting there saying, alcohol? Why are we talking about alcohol? Well, I'm going to tell you why we're talking about alcohol, because it's an issue with women of all ages. And we're going to have a little conversation about it with a nuance to it. It's a little nuance. And we're doing this with our expert, Sarah Rusbach. Okay, now, Sarah is author of the best-selling book, Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. She's a health and well-being coach. She's also an accredited gray area drinking coach. What is that? You're going to learn very, very shortly. But the most important thing is that she shares her journey to sobriety and the impact of alcohol on mental health. That's the key thing. Sarah, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so good to be here.
So you're all the way out there in Australia. We tracked you down. We stalked you. We trolled you. But here we are. And, you know, I think it's because you had such a nuanced way of speaking about all of this. And it's so authentic. It also comes from your own life experience. And I know that people probably have absolutely no idea what gray drinking is, because obviously you were one. So let's define it and tell us about the origins of gray drinking.
So gray area drinking is a term that was actually coined by an American, Jolene Park, who in 2012 started talking about this nuance of gray area drinking. And the reason this came about was because we've historically talked about people's alcohol use as being, you have a problem or you don't. You're either in that category of what we stereotypically have called an alcoholic, or you're not. But there's millions of people in what we call the gray area, where they don't define themselves as being an alcoholic. They don't have severe alcohol use disorder, but they're still drinking at a level that is detrimental, that is causing them some negative impact, but they really struggle to stop. But the support just isn't out there for people that sit in this area. And I sat there for years and years. And the reason people stay stuck there for so long is because I never said, oh, I'm an alcoholic. I never considered myself in that category. So I never really did anything about it, because I was like, Well, I don't drink in the morning. I don't drink every day. I haven't lost my job. I haven't lost my driving license. I haven't lost my husband. I haven't lost my children. Therefore, my drinking is just, I'm a heavy social drinker. I'm a party girl. It's fine. There's nothing to worry about.
Well, I'm smelling Sex in the City here.
Right.
I really am. It's sort of like, you know, if I drank half of what these ladies drank, I'd be in a whole lot of trouble. I think a lot of women right now are listening and saying, I'm not sure if I'm a great drinker. So give us an example of how much you have to drink and how you do that to fulfill the definition of a great drinker.
There is a definition that says alcohol use disorder starts at more than 14 units of alcohol per week. So 14 units of alcohol per week is about 6 to 7 glasses of wine, self-pour glasses of wine, because at home we certainly don't pour the small amount that you might pay for in a pub, right? So alcohol use disorder starts at anything above 14 units per week. I don't like to give it a number. I like to describe it as some of the warning signs and some of the feelings. So some of the warning signs are you make rules around your drinking. So I had rules that I don't drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't drink before 5 o'clock. I don't drink white wine on an empty stomach. I don't drink before lunchtime unless I'm out with the girls. Like there was this constant rules, but then it would take up loads of headspace because in my mind I'd start going, oh, I know it's Wednesday and I'm not supposed to drink on a Wednesday, but I could have a couple of drinks tonight because I am going out to that special thing and then I just won't drink tomorrow. So then I'm having tomorrow's drinks tonight and then it's okay if I have a drink. So it starts taking up this space in your head where you're negotiating with yourself and justifying why you can break the rules that you set. And I always say people that don't have a problem with alcohol don't often need to make rules around their drinking. They just will have a drink if they fancy it and they don't drink any other time. So one of the first signs that we're falling into that gray area is it's taking up headspace. We've created rules and then we're justifying breaking them. Second point, we often drink more than we intend to. I'm just going to have one glass and that often turns into more. Third point, we're starting to silently worry about our drinking. So on the outside, probably no one thinks that we have a problem with alcohol. We probably drink like the other people around us. But on the inside, we're starting to notice, particularly for my perimenopausal and postmenopausal women, that it's impacting our sleep, our anxiety is increasing, it's taking a bit longer to recover from alcohol, and we'll come on to talking about why that is later on. So we're silently noticing the impact it's having, but we're struggling to stop. Another thing might be that we've Googled, am I an alcoholic? Because people that need to Google that probably do fall into some category of having a dysfunctional relationship with alcohol. And I always say it's about a scale of 1 to 10. So 1 is someone who doesn't drink, who maybe has a glass of champagne at a wedding once a year. 10 is that end stage physical dependency on alcohol, where someone needs to have medical support to safely withdraw, because alcohol's one of only 3 substances that the human body can die from withdrawal from. Gray area drinking is in the middle. I'd say it's about a 4 to an 8 on that scale. So we've passed the point of being a take it or leave it drinker, but we don't meet the definition for physical dependency on alcohol, where we need to have medical support to stop drinking. And it's estimated 1 to 2 billion people in the world sit in that gray area where they're using alcohol for something, but they're high functioning and it's not at the point where they need to have medical support to stop.
I bet a lot of people have absolutely no clue. They know someone who obviously is blacking out and ending up in horrible car accidents and all the rest of it. And that's an easy thing to kind of have a look at. But what I think is that women especially are starting to drink a whole lot more. And the statistics bear it out. You know, it's interesting, during COVID, not sure how it worked in Australia, I can't imagine it was much different. There was a lot of extra drinking going on for the obvious reasons. After COVID ended, the drinking continued and it did not decrease, which I thought was quite interesting. And it was women leading the way, and that women, especially interestingly, as they're aging, over the age of 50, 60, are drinking a whole lot more. And I can kind of guess and conjecture. I've also read some pretty good studies about this. This is a time in life when women are undergoing a tremendous amount of change. You know, you obviously have menopause itself biologically, but it's also a time when you're changing careers, you're changing relationships at multiple levels, you're caregiving, you're under a lot more stress on the overall, both biologically and just sort of in your ecosystem, as it were. I think a lot of women are pivoting to alcohol. What's your thought about that?
You've raised really valid points. So number one, we know that alcohol use disorder in women has increased over 80% in the last 30 years. That's 80% in the last 30 years.
It's increased 80%. That's absolutely jaw-dropping.
Yeah. Second reason for this, yes, you brought in COVID, which played a big part in it, but we need to rewind before that. 30 years ago, we now know that the alcohol industry decided to segment their marketing. And rather than just having one general marketing campaign, they identified they weren't making enough money from women. And the advertising that they were doing was very male-focused around beer and sport and everything. So they actually decided to change their advertising to segment it and start having specific products and campaigns aimed at getting women to drink more. So this coincided with the introduction of Alco-Pops, all those that got the younger girls drinking more because the young girls didn't like the taste of beer. They were worried about putting on weight. They didn't want to be drinking beer all the time. So they introduced all these other drinks. And it's also when we saw the rise of pink drinks. So all the pink wines, the pink gins, the pink champagnes all started coming into the market as well. So that started happening. Then we had COVID. And what we know is alcohol's up there with the top five most addictive substances. So you've got a woman that starts using alcohol because marketing is telling her, this is the way to relax. This is the way to switch off. Have a glass of wine. You deserve it at the end of the day. And then they're starting to develop more, I wouldn't call it physical dependence. I call it emotional dependence. And a lot of the women I work with, they're not physically dependent on alcohol. They can take breaks, but it's their crutch for stress, it's their crutch for loneliness, it's their crutch for boredom, it's their crutch for sadness, it's their crutch for anger. You insert the uncomfortable emotion and they've started using alcohol as a tool to manage that. And what you're talking about with the ladies in their 50s and 60s, and I have so many women in this age group that I work with, it's a really, really difficult time because for many, your kids are starting to leave home and you've given of yourself and your life 20 odd years to raising these humans. You've put your own life on hold. You then find yourself suddenly with all of this spare time, but maybe you've lost your hobbies along the way. You've lost your interests. You might be stopping working, coming closer to retirement. You might have health issues that are preventing you from doing the exercise and everything that you wanted to be doing. And so you're sitting at home and you're drinking. And that's where alcohol can fill that void if there is loneliness, boredom, anything like that that's coming into it as well.
It's also interesting piling on that because what you just said was so spot on is the fact that as you get older, and this is, you know, where I'm putting on my little scientist hat and physician hat, alcohol tolerance decreases with age. If you think you're going to handle alcohol at the age of 60, the way you did when you were 20, yeah, think again, because we have reduced liver function, we have decreased muscle mass, we have to be very careful about that. The other thing too is that the National Institute of Aging here of the National Institutes of Health, our big research body in the USA, says that because of that tolerance issue, older people feel the effects of alcohol much more strongly without increasing the amount they drink. So it's the same amount. So if you're noticing like, you know, I'm like not feeling so great after the same amount I've had for heaven knows how long, but this also increases the risk of falls, fractures, and car crashes. And women are much more sensitive to the effects of alcohol than men. There's a big gender specificity there that we have to honor. There's also new research that just says, you know, I sound like a Debbie Downer party pooper. Don't kill the messenger here. Research now shows that over the age of 50, 60, and definitely above that, drinking alcohol is not a great idea for older people because it's also highly associated with an increased risk in dementia. And we didn't know about that, right? So this is just sort of piling on top of what I just said about our tolerance levels going down and all the rest of it. So we've got two discussions going on right now, Sarah and I. The first one is just the biological end of this, which you have to honor. Also, there's, when I talk about biological, I want to throw in genetic. There's a very strong genetic predisposition in families toward alcoholism. So if one of your parents or there was a grandparent or someone fairly close to you who had major issues with alcohol, it is a crapshoot whether or not you're going to have the same issue. And trust me, you'll know because your tolerance will be much higher. Someone else, you know, you give them a glass of wine, they're on the floor and you're like, okay, well, so much for those genetics. But for you, you're like, oh, that was like water. Watch out. That means that you are at extremely high risk because those genetics just get passed down from grandparents to parents to kids. Sometimes they skip a generation. You could always trace it back to somebody. And so you got to be on red alert to make sure that, you know, you're not. And if you happen to be that kind of person, I would not touch alcohol. That's my recommendation. Just don't even go near it because it's a losing proposition. Your genetics are going to beat you down and supervene over any kind of crazy excuses and, you know, craziness you want to come up with. So let that little hummer go. So we've got the biological end, and then we have the whole socioeconomic, personal end. And it's just ironic that so much of this hits. So there are two times in a woman's life, it's actually true for a man too, when they feel the most stress and loneliness. It's when they're in their late teens, early 20s, and then it's when they're 50, 60 and above. In between, there seems to be a little bit more balance, as it were. So talk to us about younger people, younger women and their drinking.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the research is showing us that the younger generation are drinking less. So in Australia and the UK, I don't know the stats in America, but I would have thought very similar. The only demographic where alcohol use is going up and not down is midlife women. Every other demographic are drinking less than previous generations. And so we've got to ask ourselves, so why is it midlife women? So generally, I work with women age 45 to 70 is the age bracket that I'm working with. And I think it's two things. It's women have never been as stressed as they are. And you look at Gabor Mate's work and what he talks about with regards to women and stress and the caregivers and all of the emotional toll that they're taking. And then you've got the double whammy of the marketing towards women that alcohol is the way to switch off and relax. But going back to what you said as well earlier about women's biology, we know that women cannot metabolize alcohol as effectively as men. So for a woman to be standing next to a man drinking the same amount of alcohol, more of that alcohol enters a woman's bloodstream because she produces less of an enzyme, ALDH, alcohol dehydrogenase. So all of the health risks of alcohol occur quicker in women than they do men. I interviewed an expert who said alcohol-related stroke happens 7 times faster to a woman than it does to a man. And we can't talk about this and not talk about breast cancer. Like, alcohol is a level 1 carcinogen. And we know now in Australia, the statistics are saying 1 in 5 breast cancer diagnoses are caused by alcohol. And the World Health Organization has said there's no safe amount of alcohol when it comes to talking about cancer risks and particularly breast cancer. So what frustrates me is that we have all of these global campaigns going on, pink drinks for women. And, you know, I've even been asked to speak at charity events raising money for breast cancer where everyone's given free booze when they arrive there.
And you're like, what? What the hell are you doing? You're making this whole thing worse and back and forth. I'm so glad you brought this up about the whole issue of ads and media, social media, TikTok, and all the rest of it. Needless to say, it's almost like giving a green light to drinking like there's absolutely no tomorrow. So, you know, what's really cool here is that more information now is especially available to women about alcohol and themselves. Research is now really rocking and rolling. The National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism of the National Institutes of Health have put out some really great new research, and they show that alcohol misuse produces brain damage more quickly in women than in men. That's amazing. And there's a growing body of evidence showing that alcohol can disrupt normal brain development during the adolescent years, especially in women. And then further, women experience shrinking brain tissue, declining brain function, and brain damage faster than men as a result of alcohol use. These young female teenagers, you know what they love to do? You know this better than anyone. They binge drink and are more likely to experience memory problems compared to males who binge drink, or females, obviously, who don't binge drink. So they're the ones in worse shape. So, you know, what are we hammering home here with our wonderful Herb podcast audience? What we're really trying to say is there is a big difference between men and women, and women are coming out with the short end on this one when it comes to alcohol per se and alcohol use and what it does to us on the overall. The good news is we're talking about it more, like right now. You know, I brought this whole issue up, and I have you on as a guest right now, Sarah, because you've clearly done your homework. You've lived it. You're counseling it. You get it completely, and you can explain it so articulately. But I'm doing this because, you know, we've got a new year ahead of us. And what we'd like to do maybe is really start looking at bringing all of this under control and using that little word, sober, just basically going kind of soberish here. You know, I'm seeing that so often now. They have sober parties and sober this, sober that. I see this as a trend that's really taking on. Like, we just had Sober October, you know, and that was all over TikTok and, you know, all the rest of it. People were really into it, talking to each other. Like, I'm feeling so much better without having all of that alcohol in me. What do you think of that trend?
Yeah, look, I've been sober. I quit drinking in April 2019. I'm 48 now, so I was 43 at the time. And Pam, I just reached a point where I didn't describe myself as an alcoholic, but I knew that alcohol, after I hit 40, was starting to impact my mental health, my anxiety, my sleep. I just felt a bit crap most of the time. And I wasn't ever drinking to the point where I was terribly hungover and lying in bed vomiting for the day, but I was drinking at a point where it was just leaving me feeling low in mood, low in energy, low in motivation, low in confidence. And I took a break and I couldn't believe the difference. I took a break to like lose a little bit of weight and just see how, you know, thinking it would just make me feel a little bit better. And I couldn't believe how it was my emotional mindset that really, really changed in terms of how much more positive, clear-headed, motivated, confident I started to feel. And so I finally quit in April 2019. And then I decided to retrain to become a women's health and well-being coach and a gray area drinking coach. And in early 2021, I shared my story with a massive online women's news website over here in Australia. And I talked about my story and my journey of gray area drinking. And overnight, 8,000 women contacted me. And every single one of them said, you've just told my story. Because we have a generation of women who have been sold this idea that alcohol's liberating, it's feminine, it's the way to unwind, you'll feel more sexy, you'll have more friends, you'll feel more included, it's the adult, mature way to your reward at the end of the day. And we've all fallen for it hook, line, and sinker. And at no point has anyone said, hang on a minute, women can't metabolize alcohol like men. They're not just smaller men. They have hormones. They have different body composition. They produce less of an enzyme that breaks down and eliminates alcohol from the body. So women are more at risk from this normalized drinking. And we're now in a society that has normalized everyday drinking for women as a reward and a way to switch off. And I'm not here to say to your listeners, you must never drink. You must all go sober. But I am here to say, let's educate ourselves. Because big alcohol will do everything they can to keep this information from you. And when you picture yourself in your 70s, your 80s, your 90s, what health do you want to have? Because that is all directly related to how you live your life today. And I've got women in their 70s who I've coached who've removed alcohol, and they've gone on to really, really notice the difference. And so you're never too old to do that. And four times a year, I run women's alcohol-free challenges and support women to do 30 days together in a community removing alcohol. And it's just amazing.
I know. And there are some other thoughts here. If you drink too much alcohol, especially if it's associated with smoking, because smoking and alcoholism oftentimes go hand in hand. But if you have too much of that, you really ramp up certain risks for cancers and esophageal, oral cancers. These are not great cancers, not that any cancer is great, but these are very bad cancers. You don't want to do that. And constantly drinking in an abnormal way that you know for a fact is too much, is going to place you at higher risk for this. So you got to be super, super careful here. And to your point, you know, we're not asking everybody out there to, like I said, you know, be a Debbie Downer and a party pooper. Know yourself well. I know that as I've aged, I know I look just so ridiculously young, but as I've aged, my tolerance has definitely gone down. I mean, I am so different now. So I don't drink, you know, not that I ever drank that much at all. I mean, you know, wine with a very special dinner and champagne with a great celebration and that type of thing, you know, whoopee-doo. But I just noticed that I just don't have the tolerance. And honestly, what's wrong, you know, when you go to a party and they say, what would you like to drink? I say Pellegrino sparkling water with a little bit of ice. And then I walk around and I'm perfectly happy. And I don't have that nasty sense when I wake up in the morning. Also, you know that you're running into alcohol. I bet this is one of your little points too in your book. And that is your sleep goes to hell because alcohol has a profound effect on deep sleep and REM sleep, the rapid eye movement sleep. And both of these are essential to be able to really accomplish what sleep is supposed to do for you, which is to enhance your ability to clean out your brain, as it were, a little brain, cognitive housekeeping at nighttime, et cetera. Can't do that if alcohol is floating around in you. Now, a little FYI, if you just simply had a glass of wine and then 3 hours later you went to sleep, you're fine. That shouldn't be a problem. But, you know, drinking all the way up, I mean, like in bed, that's always an issue. Sleep is absolutely integral to good health. Sleep is integral to good health. So we've got to make sure to be able to connect all the dots, you know, the downside on a lot of this. And I think to your point, I mean, you helped answer a lot of questions for me. Of course, I have my sneak peek at the book, but I wanted you to reiterate exactly what gray drinking looks like. Because I think a lot of women are in denial. I'm fine. For all the reasons you said in the way in the beginning, oh, I haven't lost my job. I haven't lost my husband. You know, my kids are still loving me. You know, home's all taken care of. Job's looking good. But, you know, those little red flags that you mentioned before, they're really worth mentioning again. You know, very simply, red flag. First red flag, if a woman walked up to you and said, you know, I'm not sure and I think I'm fine, what would that red flag be, Sarah?
So let me ask a question to your listeners now. If I said to you, tomorrow, we're all going to do 30 days off booze together. Right, that's it. Just starting tomorrow. Some of your listeners will be like, yeah, fine. They don't have a problem with alcohol. It just doesn't matter to them. If I say to them, we're going to do 30 days, they'll be like, others will be listening going, oh, I can't do that because I've got that party and I've got that event. And how am I going to do that? If you've got a situation where you can't even consider right now taking 30 days off alcohol, then you've probably got a relationship with alcohol where there is some kind of emotional reliance, even if it's not physical. So it's just asking yourself that question. It's, do I often drink more than I intend to? Am I consumed with thinking about drinking and justifying why I can drink? Do I have rules around my drinking that I often break? Am I silently noticing that alcohol is impacting me and maybe my attempts to cut down just aren't working? Because that was it for me. I would wake up on a Monday morning going, oh God, I'm not right. That's it. I'm taking a week off booze. I'm not drinking. I've had a heavy weekend. I'd get through Monday. I wouldn't drink. I'd get through Tuesday. Maybe I, you know, wouldn't drink, have an early night. By Wednesday, I'm like, I'm feeling great again. Sarah's back. She's got all her energy. And so how would I celebrate that? By having a drink. So I'd have one day of the week where I felt on top form. And then I never felt hungover. But as you say, a couple of glasses of wine just before bed will completely destroy your sleep. So the next day, you're just like, nah. Like the background story to my life was, I'm not hungover, I'm just tired.
It's like, it's an excuse.
Right.
It's like, I'm just tired. You know, I always say, I have a little saying, you know, that I've written in my books. It's the four-letter word, just. Okay? Once you hear the word just, you're going down some very, very bad rabbit hole of delusion about something. Oh, it's just a little cocaine. It's just a little alcohol. I'm just a little tired, you know, even though whatever. Now, let's connect some more dots here. So if you've been doing the gray drinking, which is excessive, but not the full-blown alcohol abuse syndrome, then guess what happens? You just said it. You wake up in the morning and you just feel rotten. So guess what you don't do? You don't hop in your car and go to the gym, work out. You're not going to put on your sneakers and do a nice run. Forget it. Not happening. And then now we have another problem, and the other problem is you're not going to be eating well either, because alcohol is going to disrupt many of the circadian rhythm hormonal balances that we've got. And so appetite and hunger get screwy, and suddenly we're reaching for stupid things. It's like an out-of-body experience, like, you don't need that. That's terrible stuff, but there you are eating it. You're not present. You're not mindful. You're not paying attention is the issue. So you've got rotten nutrition and you've got rotten sleep. You're not getting your physical activity. Girlfriend, what the hell are you doing here? You're destroying yourself. And you're doing it in little bits and pieces. You didn't just sort of go from zero to the extreme alcohol abuse syndrome. You're kind of playing around in that gray zone. And that gray zone's like a slow erosion. You're still going to have the same issues and all the rest of it, including look down on your belly. You see that belly hanging out there all over, you know, right? You tried to button that and that's not happening. And so suddenly elastic is your new best friend. Okay. So where do you think that belly's coming from? Turns out there's really hardcore science that shows that when you drink too much alcohol, gray zone or above, you know, all the way to the ultimate syndrome, when you drink too much alcohol, there's a preferential depositing of excess fat in the subcutaneous and the visceral fat depots. And that's why you've got beer belly and alcoholic belly. You know, it's not your left calf that's getting bigger. It's your belly. Now, that's the worst thing that can happen. I'm connecting another dot, because now you've got too much of a kind of fat, intra-abdominal, that is highly associated with the metabolic syndrome, which is heart disease, high blood pressure, and rot row. Here we go. Type 2 diabetes, very rampant in this crowd. So, because what do you think alcohol is? It's carbohydrate. And you're drinking it 24/7. So, you know, you're going to be disrupting even the insulin hormone circadian rhythms. So now do you kind of see how all this works? If you feel like you're a gray zoner, you need to pick up this book right away. This is the book that Sarah has written. And in this book, which is Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol Free. So you heard me, right? Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol Free. Read it. Understand, you know, that you're not alone. And then join her community. She's got a fabulous website. It's Sarah with an H, Rusbatch, RUSBATCH.com. And then learn how you can get help and join a community that's supportive. Ask the right questions. Get the correct answers here. Because I think that a lot of people out there are just sort of in the two extremes. I don't drink at all, or, you know, I drink once a year. Or, you know, you're just flat out in the middle of the road with a blackout. There's a whole world in between that could get you into all kinds of trouble. Does that make sense, Sarah?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wrote this book. It's such a positive book, and it's so motivating because I've been sober for 5.5 years. And I thought a life without alcohol would be boring. I thought it would be a less than life. And my life has changed beyond recognition. My relationships have changed, how I parent my kids, how I manage my stress, my overall health. I've reversed estrogen dominance. I've lost the belly fat. You know, all of the things. I've run my first marathon this year at the age of 48. My perimenopause symptoms are being so much better managed because I'm not drinking. I'm able to get on top of certain things. So I wrote this book on all the things that I've added into my life, because you can't take alcohol out and not add anything in, because most of us are drinking for a reason. I've got a community of 20,000 women. And I said, why do you drink, or why did you drink? And there were three answers, Pam: boredom, stress, and loneliness. So I have answered all those questions in this book about how to create a fun plan, what to add in, and what do you do with your spare time. I've got a whole chapter on stress. I've got a whole chapter on finding your purpose and living a life aligned to your values. I've got a chapter on rediscovering your relationship if you remove alcohol, because my husband and I, we always drank together. And so we had to go through a whole journey of what that looked like when I stopped drinking. I've got a section on sober sex, because lots of my women haven't actually had sex with their partners without having a few drinks before, particularly as they've got older, to get in the mood, to relax, to connect, all of those things. I've got a chapter on socializing sober and what to say when people ask why you're not drinking and all of those things. And so I'd love for your listeners, if they can get the book on Amazon, or it's also available on Audible with me recording it. And there's a lot in there about my own personal journey as well. But I think the first thing to say is alcohol robbed me of my light. It started to erode who I actually am as a person. I'm such a passionate, driven, go-getting person. And slowly but surely, alcohol was robbing that from me. It was making me tired, lethargic, anxious, unmotivated. Just, you know, that can't be asked kind of feeling of like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, talking about all the gunners all the time, but never doing any of it, because low-level hangovers and low-level anxiety always prevent you from reaching for your dreams and reaching for your goals. And with the removal of alcohol, I've gone on to create a life that I absolutely love. And one of my clients said to me the other day, it's like I've gone from living in black and white to living in color.
That's such a beautiful way to say it. You know, you also said something that was really important. Again, I'm going to pivot over to biology. So if you're a young woman who's struggling with this gray drinking, binge drinking, the rest of it, look at your menstrual cycle. It's going to end up getting screwy. And you're also, any symptom you had with it, like maybe a little bit of PMS or whatever, it's going to get 10 times worse. Everything is getting disrupted. So now we flash forward to perimenopause. And with perimenopause, we already know now through our research that you have an increase in anxiety. It's one of the hallmarks of perimenopause, and that is excessive anxiety. It makes it all worse. If you start having hot flashes, the same thing. Alcohol does not help with that. You know, most women will have kind of sleep disruptions that are very characteristic of the perimenopausal, menopausal time. And if you think your sleep disruptions are rotten, drink on top of that. So what I'm really trying to say to you is that you can get so many benefits out of just, you know, either going sober or just cutting back big time if you can. Now, if you can't, you need help. You need help. Let's just get with it now. You need help. And I know that Sarah's book has what the next steps are, you know, what you really need to do to be able to stop drinking at all. And you also said something that was so spot on, Sarah, and that is you were drinking for a reason. You lonely? Do something about it. Get up. Let's make some new friends. Is it work? Yeah. Nobody's going to fall into your lap. You got to go out there and work it, girlfriends. Do hard things. Work it. Just like you do in everything in life. Nothing just falls in your lap. You got to be able to understand that this is a big call out to you. Why are you drinking excessively in the first place? It could simply be that you were given a green light in your mind to just do the Sex and the City thing. It looked like fun. All right, we're going to put a stop to that one right there, number one. Number two, if it's loneliness, if it's sadness, if it's grief, if it's stress at whatever level, you need to address the origins of all of that and come up with another way to cope that does not involve self-destruction, because that's what gray drinking is. It's self-destructive.
Absolutely. And the irony is, Pam, that so many women think of alcohol as self-care, and they think about it as being their reward and their way of switching off at the end of the day. And, you know, I just don't think a substance that is a level one carcinogen that disrupts our sleep and makes us anxious and makes us feel like that we're living half a life cannot be described as self-care. To me, it's a form of self-harm. And so it's find the ways that really support you to feel your best and to go out there and live your best life, because you get one.
That's exactly right. There's one other thing before we close up here. You've just been such a fount of information and knowledge here, Sarah. And that is, you be careful who you're hanging out with. All right? If you're hanging out with a bunch of drinkers, you know, I want you to take 10 steps back and take a deep breath. Something ain't working here. And then if you're living with someone who's got an issue, be careful. You know, you're going to have to somehow address that as well. I'm not here to, you know, give you your big counseling session, but I know that Sarah has dealt with this in her work. But it's important to just call it out, tell your true truth about all of this. And there's another thing I'm just going to kind of throw out there. Women have seen for years on television, in movies, whatever, guys drinking. It's cool. And just watching them drink under all kinds of circumstances, women oftentimes say, well, I want to be like a guy. You know, if they can do it, I can do it. But the answer is no. That's a hard no. Because I just told you, women and men are very different with regard to alcohol. And obviously, men can be alcoholics too. I'm simply saying that there's a biological difference between men and women in tolerance and the ability to be able to handle this. And the answer is never compare yourself to a guy. Do not go there. Do not go there. You know, you may be married or partnered with somebody who can handle just, you know, one glass of wine a night, have no problem whatsoever. Or you could be with someone who's got more problematic drinking. You need to take a big breath here and examine the entire ecosystem within which you live. And just be really brutally honest about that. All right, Sarah, before we close out, one brief little nugget to be able to help women out there as they're kind of thinking about this and wondering, am I okay here?
I would say take 30 days off, and see what changes. Notice. See, is it an experiment on your life? Because most women never take a long enough break to actually know how they feel without it. So join one of my programs, or I've got one starting on the 6th of January for women to do 30 days off alcohol together, or look at, there's many other sober programs out there as well. But give yourself the opportunity of seeing how you feel without it. So you've got then the evidence to be able to go, how do I parent? How do I feel? What's my energy like? What's my sleep like? What's my nutrition like? What's my mindset like? What's my self-talk like when I'm not drinking alcohol? And then you can go, and which version of my life and which version of me do I like better? Give yourself the chance to know that.
That's brilliant. Do the 30-day challenge. And the other thing too is, I'm kind of blown away by what you said in the beginning as one of the red flags. And that is, if you look at your life as completely alcohol centric, like, I don't do that at all. I mean, if I'm thinking about like doing whatever I'm doing today, I don't think about strategizing. What am I going to drink? Is there going to be a party coming up? Should I hold off on eating because I have some alcohol that's going to, never entered my mind, because, you know, I just don't have an issue with it. But that blew me away, because I bet people in the gray zone are living an alcohol-centric life. That's the way I look at it. So, such pearls of knowledge. Everyone, we have been talking to Sarah Rusbach, and she is the author of Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. Take yourselves on this year. Take yourselves on. And just think about how you might want to clean this little corner of your life up, because I think it's going to be so worth it. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast. This has just been an absolutely terrific episode.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you enjoy the summer down there while we're having winter in Down Under, that beautiful place. When I was in Australia, I couldn't even get enough of it. It's such a beautiful country. So, you know, enjoy, and keep up the fabulous work and coaching, because I have a funny feeling we're going to need you a lot, to say the least. Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, everyone out there, hop on over to iTunes right now. Rate and review this terrific episode, because I would love your feedback. And here's another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. Check out the Her Life Stages products. And by the way, got a little problem out there. You need multivitamins, and Solaray has fabulous women's multivitamins, also by age. So it's really important to, you know, stay up with who you are biologically and by age. Oh man, what a great show on the Herb podcast today. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Herb podcast community. Pop on over to drpeek.com to learn more about moi and all my work, and join me every week for another Her podcast. You know, we're going to be always hearing from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Sarah Rusbach. And we want to hear their wit and wisdom, because we want to enjoy that, take it, and apply it to our own lives. All right, thanks so much. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. How about a little carpe diem? Have a great one, everyone.